This is the Microsoft Cloud Show, episode 104, recorded live November the 17th, 2015. CJ and I are going to answer a listener question about the developer landscape and the Office 365 in cloud and SharePoint on-prem world. Welcome to the Microsoft Cloud Show, the only place to stay up to date on everything going on in the Microsoft Cloud world, including Windows Azure, Office 365, SharePoint, Exchange, Link, and related technologies. Just the information, no marketing, no BS. I'm Andrew Connell.
And I'm Chris Johnson.
And we're just two dudes telling you how we see it.
Good morning, CJ. How are you?
Awesome.
Awesome. Why awesome?
Well, this weekend was a little painful. The Friday night, I looked at my inbox and had 1,500 unread emails from angry MyTrips users that their lifetiles weren't updating. And so I pulled an all-night bender on Friday night. Well, all night. For me, it's all night. Hey, I'm approaching 40. It was 3:30 in the morning by the time I got to bed.
Oh, wow. That's an all-nighter.
That's basically all night for me. Moving the back end of MyTrips, the service behind it, to Azure off the host that it was currently on. Because it wasn't currently on.
Was that the problem?
Yeah, I may have missed an email about billing and they turned my site off and deleted the backups.
Ooh, that's painful.
Yeah.
Man, that's a bit heavy-handed approach on customer service.
Yeah, that's what you get when you only pay $5 a month for hosting.
I guess that's a good point.
Anyway, so I owed them like $20 and they turned the back end of my trips off.
Oh, you're kidding me.
And deleted all the databases and the code and everything.
Oh.
So, Friday night I was up late. Obviously, I had all the source code and rewriting a little bit of that to deal with Azure. There were some things that I was doing that I couldn't do in Azure around storage and writing files on the local file system. Mm. So I had to fiddle about with those a little bit. And then deploy to a website in Azure and redirect the DNS and reissue SSL certs and do all that sort of stuff and create a SQL database and then migrate my schema and migrate what data I had and all that sort of stuff and get the app back up and running.
Dude, that sounds like a lot of fun.
Yeah, not really. But I then spent most of Sunday replying to all those emails saying, hey, I'm really sorry, this is super embarrassing, but I forgot to pay a bill. But here are the steps to rectify the problem, and people's live tiles should be back up and running on Windows Phone and on big Windows.
That's funny. I talked to a few people. I'm at a conference this week, and I talked to a few people that they mentioned it, and they said, yeah, we don't really know what happened. I was like, oh, that's funny. He told me he forgot to pay a bill, and they deleted his site. And he's like, what?
Yeah. Yeah.
So did you lose?
Contacted the hoster.
Did you lose a lot of data? Or?
Well, yeah, I did. I did. I lost a lot of data. But fortunately, I don't want to blow my own trumpet here, but I was pretty defensive with my programming. And that means that the app wouldn't stop working. It would keep working, even though the service wasn't there, which you could say, well, yeah, duh, that's a good idea. But also, in terms of the data that was in the database, the next time somebody logs into their phone app, like and starts the application, it will re-register with the service each time. So it sort of calls home and makes sure that the back end is up and running for that user. So it was really – I started with a pretty much an empty database. And then all of the users, when they use the app, would start registering again and they'd be fine. So from a user perspective, it wasn't too bad. Mm. But they would have to restart the app before their live tile would start working again.
So to restart, I mean, they don't – if it's – okay, yeah, I get it. Okay.
They just have to use the app on the phone and – it would call home and make sure everything's cool and set everything back up again for their live tile.
So now you feel comfortable that everything's in Azure?
I feel much better, actually. You know, what was weird about this is I had a whole bunch of sort of half-deployed bits of the back end to Azure. Mm-hmm. It was a project that I was working on probably 6 or 7 months ago that I never got around to finishing. And I looked in my Azure subscription and I was like, huh, I've already got a database. I've already got a website, but it's not running anything. I'd never deployed any code to it or deployed the schema, but I had a website called MyTrips and a database called MyTrips already in my Azure subscription. I just hadn't done anything with them. So
that's awesome. That's awesome.
It was a bit of a rush, but yeah. How about you?
Doing good. I'm in Orlando this week at a conference called – it's a VS Live conference, but it goes by a bunch of different names. And I'm one of the co-chairs with Matt McDermott on the SP Live 360, or the SharePoint side of it. So
yeah.
Did a full day workshop yesterday. Matt and I did a keynote this morning. And
what'd you talk about in your keynote?
We did a different style keynote. So I've always wanted a keynote not to be, if you're going to announce stuff, then that's one thing. But if you have nothing to announce, which we really had nothing to announce. I mean, we're not Microsoft. We don't have a product that we're, you know, doing or anything. So that we were like, you know, who do you actually talk about with this? Or what's the theme? I was like, you know what? When you have a keynote that's like that, I've always wanted to have the keynote in a sense be a roadmap for the rest of the conference. And so what we did is we surveyed the room, really good mix of people between Office 365, people who are interested in SharePoint on-prem, people who are interested in 2016, people who are like, we're not doing anything with what we have right now in terms of upgrading or migrating or any of that stuff. So we just want to, how can we take advantage of what we have? And so we talked about kind of like with the state of SharePoint and Office 365 today, how we see it, how we approach it going forward. And then all the different things we talked about, we tied one of our sessions, not one of ours, but like one of the sessions in the SharePoint track to the different topics. And so people that were there, they're like, you know, I'm interested in this. And Matt and I were able to call out different things that were different sessions they can go to. So we got some good feedback from it. I'm really curious to see how people, you know, like it over the course of the week.
Yeah.
But it was interesting. I was really interested by the mix of people that were at this show. So we went from, I don't know if they published like how many people are at each one of the different tracks at this conference, but I can tell you last year we were the smallest track of like the SharePoint track, the Visual Studio track, the database track, the mobile track, the Tech Mentor, which is like the IT Pro track. This year, we were not the smallest. In fact, we bumped our registration numbers for the SharePoint track by over 50%.
Wow.
Yeah, so a really big thing. And I think that the difference here is that we have a really strong focus on having it between three different audiences, Dev, IT Pro, Business, and a really good focus on on-prem, Office 365, and other stuff. So like adoption, business, all that kind of stuff. So I've talked to the conference. I'm hoping to try and get them to change the name of it from SharePoint Live to Office or Office 365 Live to show bigger tents type stuff. So I think that there's a lot of interest there.
Cool. Wow, that's pretty positive. Yeah.
Yeah, so it went well.
Very cool.
Yeah. So we did a question in our show last week. Got another one this week. We got a question that this week that we wanted to run through. This question actually came in a long time ago from a guy named Lee. It came in, I guess, October the 2nd. So CJ, you want to read the question? Then we got to take a minute and kind of parse it out to kind of organize a response here, I think.
Yeah, it's I might skip a few bits of it. It's kind of long, but I'll get to the meat and potatoes.
Make sure you read the first two sentences.
Oh, yeah, sure, of course. Hi, CJ and AC. Oh, sorry, AC and CJ.
Who's it from?
Oh, sorry, this is from Lee Borlas. And its subject is podcast praise and show request.
There you go. We answered the request. So
thank you very much, Lee, for sending this in. Always great to get this. And apologies, it's taken us so long to get to it. Okay. So hi, AC and CJ. Thanks for a great podcast. I've been using SharePoint in Australia for 7 years. That's okay, Lee. I know you're in Australia, but I'll let you get by on that one. I eagerly await the show each week to keep up to date with what's fresh in Office 365/Azure land. It keeps me alive inside as I trudge, shoulders sloping, to meetings at my client to keep the lights on in their creaky SharePoint 2010 farm, chock full of nasty customization and JavaScript hacks.
Wow.
Ouchies.
I really hope your customer is not also a listener, since we called out your name.
Well, maybe this would be motivation to tidy that up. Yeah. There are a lot of great online resources around the various Office extensibility options these days, but I personally find it hard to consolidate and understand that understanding of how all the various considerations line up and which options would be used in different scenarios, e.g., how these different factors fit together and how they drive your technology choice, V1 versus V2 APIs, app add-ins versus Azure AD add-ins, e.g., what kind of thing is the Boomerang app which installed itself into my Azure AD when I installed the Boomerang Outlook add-in? It's some kind of new species of add-in /app I don't recognize, and I'm stuffed to f***ing work out what it is. REST versus JSON versus CSOM, client-side versus server-side for add-in webs, provider-hosted versus SharePoint-hosted, on-prem versus Office 365 authentication concerns, something you can sell in the store versus something you can't, I think would be really useful for people if you could do a show around a high-level overview of the current state of the API and add-in space and a decision path you could use to help you choose. Cheers, Lee. Wow.
Let's write a book.
So there's a lot to that, but we're going to parse this out and address it in a number of different stages. But again, thanks for sending it in, Lee.
Yeah, really good question. Really good question. And I totally hear you, and I can see a lot of people are really confused by this. So
what's going on, AC?
Yeah, so let me just tell you.
Enlighten us.
I can answer this whole thing in about 15 words. No, I can't.
God.
So here's how I think that we should look at this. Let me just preface it with, from my point of view, is that we have one of the nice things of SharePoint. It's been one of the most frustrating parts for a lot of people, for developers specifically. But one of the nice things about SharePoint is that we have tons of options to do lots of the same thing. And it really depends on what you're doing, what your customer is, what your environment's like, and when things make the most sense. And then there's also an element of, what do you prefer? What do you like? So, you know, you got to jump between the on-prem. I think that the on-prem and the Office 365 thing, if you're in the cloud, I think those two things are kind of the first thing you kind of have to look at, because they really do dictate what your choices are and what you can and can't do. And if you're on-prem, do you also have that added dynamic of, I'm hybrid and I can take advantage of things in the cloud? Or are you on-prem because you got to stay completely on-prem?
Yeah, I think it's, you know, the same, but different. So there's, you know, there are, you know, there's things like full trust code on premises, but there isn't in the cloud. But there is overlap as well. And I think that's causing some confusion, right? It's like people want to use some of the new stuff, but they're stuck on prem and they're not sure what's applicable and things like that. So why don't we sort of walk through some of the options and talk through each one?
Yeah, that works. So let's do the boomerang one first. I think I can answer that one pretty easy. So, and this is in the bigger picture of app add-ins or app SharePoint add-ins or Azure AD applications. So when SharePoint first shipped, when SharePoint first came out for SharePoint 2013, we did not have a concept really so much of apps inside of Azure AD. And the authentication story around apps and Azure AD and SharePoint and Office 365 was somewhat of a kind of, everything was evolving at the same time. And I think that there's a bit of, if certain things were in place, we would have gone in a certain direction, but we didn't have that option.
Yeah.
So ACS was the only thing that was available to us. It's access control services. So when we look at Office 365, to do apps, all of the authentication, all the registration happens with ACS.
Which was kind of a predecessor to Azure AD in some ways, parts of at least anyway.
Right. It really was. But now what we have is and then when we went on-prem, we didn't have anything like that. So everything had to be registered inside of SharePoint, and you didn't have this OAuth style authentication because you didn't have the third player in the whole authentication dance. Now, since then, we've gotten Azure AD and a way to go through and build applications that use the authentication of Azure AD. SharePoint apps are currently still in ACS, and Microsoft has said that the ACS style of doing apps has been deprecated. I'm not sure how forceful they've been about, like, is it going away? Are they going to wipe it out or anything like that? And you should be moving to Azure AD apps. But I think that in the going forward, that the future definitely is building apps in Azure AD or defining the apps, registering them in Azure AD and having all the permissions live there. Now, that brings up a big question. This has come up two times already at the conference I'm at, which is, well, what does that mean for the stuff that we've done for SharePoint add-ins with ACS and Office 365?
Yeah.
And to me, my answer for that one is, you don't do anything right now. You don't do anything right now. You don't change anything, because really the onus is on the SharePoint team to figure out what that story is going to be from going from ACS over to Azure AD.
Yeah.
If that's an option, if ACS sticks around, don't fret about that one. Don't freak out about that one. There's nothing you can do about it. And we have to wait and see what is going to be supported and then how we get there.
Yeah, I think the good bit about that, right, is that's the security part.
Yep.
To dumb it down, right? But at the end of the day, it really doesn't change from an application point of view. It doesn't change how you build your app from a back-end and code point of view, right? So you will ultimately may have to change the way you're getting your security tokens when they switch from ACS to Azure AD, maybe. It depends on how Microsoft deal with the migration. But your backend code is ultimately just getting a set of security tokens that it can then use to call APIs.
Yep. all of this stuff going forward, all of the new APIs that we're getting, things like when the Office 365 APIs, things with like the unified API, all of those things are what they're all leveraging the Azure AD style of doing app development, right? Where we have an application registered in Azure AD. The tokens issued by Azure AD, that's what the unified API understands. That's what all the Office 365 APIs, that's what they all understand. So that's definitely the way going forward. So to your question specifically about Boomerang, Boomerang is an Azure AD app. Now, it appears to have been registered as a multi-tenant app inside of whoever owns Boomerang. It's registered like that inside of their Azure AD tenant, because when you install that inside of your Outlook deployment or your Outlook install, when you first go to use it, it says you need to sign in, and it asks right away, do you want to give this app permission to talk to your mailbox? That right there, it shows up inside of your Azure AD subscription as an app, because it's an app that you've given permission to access your resources. And Azure wants to give you a list of, here's everything that's actually that touches your mailbox. Yeah. The same way that if you go to Facebook or Twitter and say, let me see all the things that I've granted access to my Facebook account or to my Twitter account.
Yeah.
You can see a list of those and you can revoke those. Azure AD is doing the same thing in that case.
Yep, absolutely. So it's, you know, this security model of registering apps in Azure AD with OAuth, you know, for OAuth and things like that, it's very, very commonly adopted pattern, I guess, for want of a better word, across internet services. So like you said, Twitter and Facebook, and now Azure AD, right? It's coming the central repository for apps being registered.
Yeah. I like this new model. I like using Azure AD for registering apps and having the central place for it. I like the fact that Azure AD is also the place that team is responsible for managing the app registration, managing the interfaces for me to be able to revoke access from an application stuff. That's not stuff I'm relying on Office 365 for, and I get to rely on Office 365 investing their time, their investments and stuff on providing collaboration business level solutions, not so much the development level solution. So I like that.
It's good for IT as well. Like, I'm no IT pro, but what I hear from them is that they like seeing what applications people are using inside the organization. They can roll them out across users using Azure AD as well, so they can consent on behalf for other users and so forth. And they can also, you know, keep an eye on what the various people are using inside the organization and revoke access if needed as well. More control.
Yeah, and all that stuff is being done on the identity side, right? From user side, from the app side. I like the way that whole thing is set up. So that's one piece. I mean, and when we look at you have another question here. I'm sorry, you have talking about REST versus JSON versus CSOM, client side versus server side for add-ins and all that stuff. What are your choices there? Well, I mean, to be honest, this to me really comes down to, number one, what technology stack are you working with? And number two, what do you prefer? This is totally up to you, right? There's nothing that says you have to go one way or the other. We've been given the ability to do authentication fully client side, so we can have using the ADLJS and using the implicit flow with Azure AD. So you can build a full client side based application using something like Angular. You could do the exact same thing with a server side style add-ins, and you could say, no, I prefer using C# and everything. Fine, do that. You're good to go. It doesn't matter. It's a total preference thing on what you're doing and really what the solution is that you're building. Do you want to protect your IP? Well, then you may want to put that stuff server side. Having that stuff client side doesn't really make a lot of sense.
Yeah.
This is just a preference thing to me. That's the client side versus server side thing. What's your take on that?
Yeah, I think you're right. I think it's, you know, for some types and styles of applications, you'll need the server side component versus just client side, right? Because you might need background processing or timed jobs or all sorts of things like that that you may not be able to mirror doing just client side. But honestly, I think you hit the nail on the head that it's preference, right? And there's APIs for each approach, you know, whether you're doing it from the client side or server side. And so whether you back end as Node or ASP.NET or what have you, you've got APIs you can use to call,
yep,
or in JavaScript as well. So on the front end, at least.
Yep.
So yeah, I think it's really depends on what functionality your app needs and how you're going to map that to an implementation. But the good news is whichever way you do it, you know you're going to be able to call the APIs you need.
Yep, exactly. The other side too, the other question to this is, you say REST versus CSOM versus JSOM. I'm going to throw in there native SDKs. So now I put JSON and CSOM in the same bucket. When I say CSOM, I also I'm talking about the .NET implementation of it. I'm talking about the JavaScript implementation of it. I know some people like to parse those out, but it really, to me, they're the same thing. They're the same API. Either side, either one is the same API. Your choice is really coming down to, and they have a strong correlation with other SDKs that we have around the Office 365 SDKs around like iOS, Android, .NET, Ruby, Java. I think this one really comes down to a matter of preference. So first of all, if you prefer working with like Fluent APIs, if you prefer working with more managed code or not having to deal with the plumbing and stuff with REST, then the CSOM is great for you. The SDKs are great for you. You have to make sure that you're using one that is provided on the or that works on the platform that you're using. So for example, if you're using .NET, then Microsoft has you covered on there. But let's say you're working with iOS. Well, you can't use the CSOM for SharePoint if you're working on iOS or if you're working on Android. They do have them for Office 365 though. So what's your other option? The other option to me is REST, right? And with REST, it's you just need to be able to make an HTTP call and be able to process a response. Some people prefer to work with just the straight raw REST responses. Some people are, it's required to actually do it that way because you don't have an SDK for the platform that you're working in. And then there's the other side that just says, I prefer using REST if I'm doing things like in JavaScript, if I'm using Node or if I'm using client-side stuff, because the data that comes back to me is JSON data and JSON works really well with JavaScript. So a lot of this comes down to preference to me as well.
Yeah. So to address Lee's last point here about it'd be really useful for people if you could do a show around the high-level overview of the current state of the API, add in space, and a decision path you could use to help choose. So if we take this from the top, I think my decision tree as I approach these sorts of things is pretty straightforward, right? It's the first at the top of the tree. It's do you need to expose UI in either Office or SharePoint? If you answer yes to that question, like i.e. you want to stick something in Outlook or you want to stick a web part into SharePoint and you want it to be cloud friendly, add-ins, whether that be Office add-ins or SharePoint add-ins, is the way to go. Right? If you don't need the UI to be embedded directly into the applications, then you can start thinking about a web app that's Azure AD registered, pops up on the app launcher in Office 365, or is launched some other way. So that's another choice you've got. Then you got to say, do I need my thing to be able to work on premises or not? And if the answer is no, it doesn't need to work on premises, then you can stick with add-ins. You can stick with Office add-ins. You can stick with SharePoint add-ins, and you're good to go. If your answer is yes, it needs to work on premises, then my decision tree gets a little more complicated. And usually then I ask myself, for SharePoint, for example, do I want to go down the full trust route or do I want to go down trying to get SharePoint add-ins working on premises with the high trust model, which is possible on premises but complicates things a little more. Whereas in the Office space, it's much easier to get an Office add-in working with an on-premises solution. So it is complicated, but at each point in the tree, you've got to ask yourself some pretty fundamental questions. It's on-prem versus the cloud. Do you absolutely have to have it working in both places, or do you just need it in one? And then do you want to expose UI or not? That's those are the first hoops I jump through anyway.
Yeah, that's a good tree. It's a good way to kind of think through it. I think that one of the things that I think you're going to find, Lee, is that you're not going to find a prescriptive thing that says, here's when this works, here's when this doesn't work, and here's when you should use this or when you should use this. Because really, I think that each time you do that, you're going to have all these options on either side, and there's so many different factors that kind of play into it that it's almost impossible to try and come up with a really good defined pattern for this. So it really is like what we're doing today where, CJ just shared how he kind of approaches this stuff, how he makes his decisions on it. You need to listen to what other people are doing and just kind of take the best with it and say, let me just follow this line of thinking. Like for me, I don't like using SDKs. I don't like using the native SDKs we have for Office 365. I don't like using the CSOM. I prefer to use REST. Why do I do that? Because I do a lot of both client and server side work. And I know that what I'm writing for client, I know what I'm writing for server, I'm writing the exact same thing. I use the server side technology that I prefer these days is Node, nothing against .NET. I like Node. I like working with JavaScript on the client. I like working with JavaScript on the server. I like working with JavaScript as my build process. So I really like that whole stack. With that, I like working with raw REST because I know that the HTTP calls I'm making from Angular, the HTTP calls I'm making from Node, all that stuff follows the exact same pattern, and I don't have to use different technologies or different syntaxes. And all the data that comes back to me is JSON, and JSON works great in JavaScript, so I've got nothing to lose there. That's my preference, though. Someone, you know, there's a session that's at the conference this week where they're going to go through CSOM and REST. Rob Windsor's going to do it. We talked about it in the keynote. A bunch of people are interested in going to the session because they're curious to see both sides of it. So I'm curious to sit in there and have a discussion with people and find out, you know, where they go on. I know I've had discussions with a guy that our listeners may be familiar with, Doug Ware, quite a bit, who much prefers using CSOM and using a Fluent API than he does using REST. There's nothing wrong with that. There's nothing that makes that better or worse than the options that I choose to do. We just have different approaches to it. And that's what I was saying at the beginning, which I think that this stuff is, a lot of it comes down to preference. A lot of it comes down to preference.
Yep. It's an unfortunate situation, right? That we have so many choices because there's not a perfect answer.
Yeah. And I mean, that's nice too, because I like the fact that we have so many options instead of, you know, 2 years ago, we had a few different options of being able to get to stuff inside of Office 365. But if you ever wanted to build something custom, there was a limited number of options you had.
Yeah.
Now with all the investment that Microsoft has put into these different APIs, now I can get to my data and just use, well, it's kind of backing up the point that I made a few episodes ago, which is, I mean, I can use SharePoint as a service, or I can use Office 365 as a service and not so much as a platform, and let it do the best thing, let it store all the data, let it give the extra value add to the kinds of data we're working with, whether it be workflow or user profiles or stuff like that. And then I can build my own application that can then do a mashup of those things and do some really cool stuff.
Nice.
Ta-da.
Well, I hope you took something away from that.
Yeah.
And helped a little, at least, anyway.
You're talking to me or you're talking to Lee?
Lee.
Okay, good. Yeah, me too. Yeah. I knew this
but
stuff.
Yeah, thanks again for the question.
Absolutely. Hey, I got a random thing a random update that I guess I should have done earlier.
Yeah, fire away.
This will surprise some people. So I'm a Mac guy, right? I'm an OS X guy. Prefer that over Windows.
Yep.
Guess what I did last Thursday or Friday?
Well, I know.
Yeah, you do.
That'll sound like a surprise. Ooh, what did you do, AC?
I got a Surface Pro 4.
Woohoo!
I will admit that it was a bit of an impulse purchase. And let's just say that our listeners that are outside the U.S. may not be familiar with this, but the listeners that are inside the U.S., I play on a site called DraftKings, which is kind of like daily fantasy football, and it's...
Yeah, you mentioned it last week, right, on the show, briefly.
Had a really good weekend 2 weekends ago. I really don't like working inside of a virtual machine for like local development. And I've wanted a native machine. And so I went and was trying it out. I went and got a Surface Pro 4. I got the i5, 256 gigs, 8 gigs of RAM. And my concern was, is this going to be enough to run Visual Studio and do the stuff that I want to be able to do when I need to do native development? I am very pleasantly surprised that this thing seems to be perfectly, plenty powerful for what I wanted to do on it, just to do standard, just normal dev on it. It's pretty impressive. It's pretty quick. It actually did better in my workshop yesterday than my MacBook Pro did for running Visual Studio in a VM.
Nice.
Yeah. So I liked it. I love the form factor. I love the fact that it does not feel like I'm adding much weight to my backpack or in my bag by just throwing that in there in the power brick. I can't believe this, but Microsoft actually beat Apple on the size of the power adapter.
Well, you know, I actually think Apple's power adapters. They've done loads with their laptops and like actual hardware, and nada with the power bricks.
That's true.
There's no way to, like, I argue that nobody can curl the power cords correctly for a MacBook.
Yeah, that's true. They always pop off.
Well, it's like, don't get me started. It's a frustration in design. It's piss poor, pardon my French.
It's funny for a company that gets so much credence for design stuff, but...
Yeah, the only bit that they've designed is the end that plugs into the computer. The rest of it's rubbish.
Yeah. Well, I got a Surface Pro 4. I'm pretty darn impressed with it. I love the form factor. I love the weight. The pen is really impressive, so much so that I am now playing with the thought of going back to OneNote, converting everything from Evernote back to
just
OneNote.
Just having a OneNote machine. Nice.
Well, not just a OneNote machine, but I have OneNote on.
You know.
Yeah.
But you could have it open sitting on the side with just notes or whatever if you wanted.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So, I mean, I use it a little bit and listening to somebody's session today. And I tell you, the one thing that OneNote has got to get, though, to really get me to jump over is tagging.
You use it. I guess I've never used Evernote, and I search on tag names, but I just don't tag the notes. That just, those words are in the note, so I find them.
Yeah.
But it would be nice to be able to designate like categories or something.
Yeah, I mean, it'd be nice to just kind of, like, I'm thinking of different ways of doing it, and since OneNote's got an API, do I take the time to write something that actually adds tags as like hashtags to all my notes, and then I can search for those hashtags? But then I got to write something, and I just really want to do a migrate over. And the ability to be able to sketch stuff with the pen, I've tried it on iPad, and it just sucks. There's no good pen with iPad sucks.
It's not a proper digitizer, like that, at least that I, it's the way I understand it, right? Is in the Surface Pro series, there's a proper like digitizer.
Yeah. So anyway, I mean, it's not going to be my primary machine. I still greatly prefer OS X for as a web developer, but it's nice having a native machine for Visual Studio. Mm. It's also nice. I mean, let's face it, it's nice to have a backup machine too when you need it.
Yeah, I have my Pro 3 around for that reason.
Yeah, I'm not throwing away my iPad. I'm not throwing away my MacBook, but it's just another device to play with.
Yeah, nice.
Yeah.
I'm glad to hear.
Yeah.
Excellent.
Cool, man. I thought that was a good show. Hope everybody enjoyed it.
Yeah, thanks for the question, Lee. If anybody else has any other questions, please send them in to us. We'd happily take them.
Absolutely, yeah.
We think we want to do a Docker deep dive at some point soon, which we'll, I think we'd love to do. So that's a good topic we got coming up.
Yeah, that one will be fun. I'm really looking forward to doing that. I've been playing even, since we talked about it last time, I've been playing even more at the tech, and it is, it's so much more cool than I thought it was about a year ago.
Yeah, it's not until you start playing with it that you really realize.
Yeah.
Cool.
Cool, man.
Thanks, AC.
Yeah, man. I will talk to you next week.
Sounds good.
If you have a question for us, go to microsoftcloudshow.com/questions, where you can submit it as text. We'll record it as a WAV or an MP3 file and provide a link so that we can play your question on the show. Our theme music is an excerpt from Evaporated Eric by Monk Turner, used under Creative Commons. You can subscribe to us in iTunes by searching for the Microsoft Cloud Show or via RSS at microsoftcloudshow.com, where you'll also find a full transcript and show notes of each episode. You can find us on Facebook searching for the Microsoft Cloud Show or on Twitter at MS Cloud Show. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.